Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here till 5 a.m. It is Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday. That was not part of Wildcard Wednesday, by the way. We played that for a purpose. My guest right now is Dave Hoekstra, who you hear on Saturday nights right here on this very radio station on the Nocturnal Journal. Hi, Dave.
I love the nocturnal vibe on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Coming down here was a lot easier than getting down here on a Saturday.
Oh, it is, right? Yeah, it's much. I know. I used to have your shift on Saturdays.
And
it's
no traffic.
Really nice. But this is great. And you're upstairs instead of downstairs because you do your show downstairs. Yeah. I prefer this studio.
I think it's got a better month. Nighttime. I was on training wheels up in one of these other studios.
Oh, yeah.
Before they let me go downstairs. Yeah.
Well, Dave is here, a great writer, and been on the show many times. By the way, it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and has written a book with Steve Dahl and Paul Natkin called Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died. And it's a great book, Dave.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
I love it.
I don't even agree. I didn't come up with the title.
Right.
As you read in the end of the book, I mean, disco did become house and even later EMD and all. So disco still is around.
Yeah. It is. It is. But it's a catchy title.
Yeah.
It's a catchy title. So the book. Well, first of all, let's start with the fact that both you and I were there, and we didn't know each other then.
Right. No, we didn't. You were in left field. I was in right field.
That's exactly right. I thought we were both in left field, you were in right field, upper deck. I was in the upper deck, left field.
Right.
And again, you know, people claim that they were there. And I can't tell you the number of times when I tell people that I was at Disco Demolition. They go, a bunch of BS. You weren't there. But I'm telling you, I was there.
Yeah.
But again, I don't have spectacular stories. I didn't ride the flagpole down. I didn't run on.
Same with me.
Yeah. But so tell me your experience. And I know it's not a very special one, but your experience going to Disco Demolition.
I'm a huge baseball fan. I think you and I are both Cubs fans.
Yes.
But I love baseball. And, you know, my dad was a White Sox fan. My dad worked in the stockyards. I knew the neighborhood a little bit. My first baseball game I ever saw was Sox Yankees in 1965 at the old Comiskey and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I love baseball. I love doubleheaders. I was dating a girl, from Beverly Miller.
Sure.
She kind of liked baseball. But, we both like music. We were listening to Dahl. I think one thing people forget about is that when that happened, Dahl and Meyer were a relatively new team.
Yeah.
They were like,
they'd just gotten together, yeah.
Right. So, I mean, we knew about this. I think they were on in mornings. Yeah, they were on
in
mornings.
Yeah, it was a morning, yeah.
And, you played Rod Stewart there. I mean, the first concert I ever saw was The Faces, one of my all-time favorite rock and roll bands at the Chicago Stadium. And he's doing stuff like, Do You Think I'm Sexy?
Yeah.
You know, so I brought the Blondes Have More Fun record to get in, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, some people must have – I can't remember what the protocol was. I mean, obviously people snuck stuff in, but I remember handing mine over to the
– I handed mine over. Yeah. I brought in – I took my parents' copy of Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
The soundtrack.
Yeah.
Took my parents' copy of that, I handed it to a guy. I know records were being flung all over the place, but they took it from me. I gave it to security to get in for 98 cents.
As we're talking about it, I'm thinking, I didn't even think about this that much, but now that you and I are talking about it, maybe you and I got there early.
We did get there early.
Because I think what happened maybe when people stormed the gates and stuff, they just brought the records in with them.
Yeah.
Mike Vec talks about how he gets into real detail. If you remember, ticket takers were in these little like wooden phone booths type things.
Yep.
And Mike Vec, they didn't have any. So when the crowd did start getting, they couldn't take, you know, at least tickets.
He moved security from there to another place.
Yeah, so I'm hunching it. My guess is, as we're talking about it, we probably got there early.
We got there early, but then disco records were flying all over the place.
Yeah, they were
being flung everywhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I went. I was an insane coho lip. I was the whole deal. I was, you know, hook, line, sinker. I love Steve Dahl, one of my radio heroes.
Yeah.
Stephen Gary, awesome. All that stuff. I was totally into rock and roll. It was all Zeppelin. It was all Aerosmith all the time, and I hated disco.
Yeah.
But secretly, I liked it. I just didn't tell my other 14-year-old friends.
Well, there was stuff like the Ohio Players and stuff.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. I think, you know, looking back, I mean, it really, even the Stones doing Miss You, I mean, the stuff that was happening with rock and roll merging with disco is...
Kiss did a disco song. And, I was made for loving you, baby.
Yeah, but, you know, some of the black music of 1979 was
great stuff.
Great stuff, yeah.
Well, it was an amazing event. that has been, as you talk about in the book, that has been made more amazing. Like, in retrospect, it's like, oh, 40 million people were there. They shut down the Dan Ryan. Yeah. How did this book begin? Tell me about how that was. Did you just get together with Steve? And
I think Steve was looking for somebody to tell the story. It's kind of like the other books I do. I mean, you know, I know Steve somewhat, you know, and I think they were looking for somebody to tell the story. I thought it was important to kind of move the needle off of Steve and make it like a time capsule.
Yeah.
And like a lot of the books I do are like oral histories. That's kind of what this is. You know, I tried to get people, you know, as many people as I could from the event, 1979, not today so much, you know. I mean, we do talk to Joe Shanahan. I think that's how we kind of end the book, because it's important to talk about the connection between Disco and House, and Shanahan worked with Frankie Knuckles.
Yep.
But I mean, I really enjoyed tracking down, doing the reporting to get people like Roger Bossert, who still is the groundskeeper there. Mm-hmm. And we got Lorelei, you know, she's out in LA, and we got the people who did the fireworks. And
you got Bob Sarant.
Yeah, Gary participated.
Gary, I couldn't believe.
Yeah, right.
When I read the book, I was like, this is the most Gary's ever talked about Disco Demolition ever.
Well, Gary is really important, you know, because, you know, I asked Steve about growing up here. You know, Steve didn't grow up here.
Yeah.
Gary, you know, I think neighborhoods and understanding Chicago helps you understand the event.
Mm-hmm.
And Gary talks about being a Southsider. You know, some of his quotes are very vivid to me, how they'd come up to the Prudential Building, turn around and go home.
Right.
That was a trip to the city, you know. And Gary being a Southsider, I thought was really important.
And that's an interesting element. So many interesting elements to the book. I love the fact that you did like an oral history. It's really compelling and fun to read, especially, you know, me, I'm a lifelong Chicagoan, and I was at the event and I listened to Steve and Gary. This is a big part of like my teen years. When I turned 14, this was a big part.
Yeah.
I turned 14 like 2 weeks before.
But what a great time to be 14.
I know. Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah. I was a little older. I was born in 50. So I was 24.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it's so well structured. But I do want to talk a little bit about the South Side angle that you get here, that you talk about, which is an angle. I grew up 6 blocks away from Wrigley on Addison. Okay. Uh-huh. On Addison. I'm a Northsider, been a lifelong Northsider. So to read the people that were there that knew what was going on, that they called it a Southside event, was really interesting to me. Talk a little bit about that.
I think neighborhood, you know, already things were kind of changing there. I mean, even today, I go to Sox games and stuff. I still feel more of an old, obviously now, more neighborhood vibe walking. I park far away. I don't pay to park there. So I park like on 31st Street. But you walk through those neighborhoods, you see people sitting on their porches and stuff. There was such a pride in neighborhood there, and people trying to hold, even back then, holding on. I mean, the Stockyards were gone, and International Amphitheater, I don't know if it was still open.
It was gone. I think it was gone at that point. You know? I think just gone.
Yeah, and Kevin.
No, you know what? No, it was still around.
Yeah,
it was still around.
Yeah, Nacken and I saw the last. I probably did it for the Sun Times. We saw the last concert at the International Amphitheater. It was 2 Live Crew.
Is that right?
Yes, but I don't remember what year that was. but Kevin Hickey, I wanted to talk to him, the chef Kevin Hickey.
Yeah.
You know, he's like 6th generation Bridgeport and stuff. He just talks about it. He went to the event, and he has a lot of interesting things to say about it. But he talks about how he's 6 blocks away. Everybody knew each other, and everybody, you know.
It's interesting because having grown up 6 blocks away from Wrigley, the experience of going to any Cub game, or I'm sorry, any Sox game, is a little out of body for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I can imagine that's the way Sox fans feel when they come to Wrigley.
Yeah.
And especially that night, it felt weird, but there were so many people there from different parts of the city. But it always felt a little strange. Like, I was on enemy territory when I went there, being a Northsider.
Some people talk about how it was daunting to go to Comiskey. I still call it Comiskey. But what? I mean, remember back in the... I lived over on Grace Street. Actually, at the time I was dating Miller, like 77, 78, 79. Remember, the Wrigley Field had not really turned around. That neighborhood, I always say, like the 84 Cubs.
That's exactly what did it, Dave. That's exactly what did it.
Yeah.
Everything changed after that season, after the 84 season.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived there since 1965, and it was sketchy, man. It was a sketchy neighborhood. A lot of gangbangers.
Yeah, right.
Not hot. It was not Wrigleyville by any stretch of the imagination.
No way.
People didn't hang out afterwards or before the game. They went home.
Yeah. Shanahan was probably one of the first people up there.
Yeah.
With music. music.
Yeah. But it is interesting that you cover the difference between viewing it as a Northsider and viewing it as a Southsider. And there is in the book, and there is in reality, kind of an ownership to Disco Demolition.
I think you have to understand the music. You know, I mean, there's a real Southside sound. People forget about that. There was all those World Series of Rocks were down at Comiskey. Yep. You know, and the Molly Hatch, all the Loop shows and stuff, they were down at Comiskey. You know, and Mike Vec was involved in that. Mike Vec and Jam got involved in that stuff and stuff. So there's a real muscle. There's a real muscle to the Southside vibe down there.
I remember going to the Eagles, Steve Miller, Pablo Cruz show.
Yeah.
I was at that one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here we go. We can, there's an in-store event. It's open to the public. And you'll be signing the Disco Demolition, The Day the Night Died at Anderson's. And that's going to be in LaGrange on September 20th. And that's you and
Steve.
And Nacken. We got to talk about who Paul is after, because everybody knows who you are and everybody knows who Steve is. And everybody should know who Paul is.
Yeah.
Who Nacken is.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Part of the reason why this book is so beautiful to look at is because of him.
It's number one on Amazon.com in photojournalism.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's
beautiful.
Yeah.
And there's also an event tomorrow night in Evergreen Park at the Evergreen Park Public Library. And the presentation starts at 6:30. We'll get into details on that. But we have to break. You know that. You have a radio show here.
Okay.
All right. Dave Hoekstra is here. We got a break. The news is coming up next. And we'll come back and talk more about Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died, with Dave Hoekstra here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio here on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower, overlooking beautiful Michigan Avenue on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in for Wildcard Wednesday. Any song, any artist, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And you can also check us out on Facebook. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. And on our Facebook page, you will find the link to get Dave Hoekstra's book. Steve Dahl, Dave Hoekstra, and Paul Nacken's book. Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died. And information about some of the events that are coming up. Like tomorrow night in Evergreen Park at the Public Library. And on the 20th. On September 20th in LaGrange at Anderson's Bookshop. We've got information on that. And joining us live is the host of the Nocturnal Journal on Saturday nights, right here from 9 to 11 on WGN. Dave Hoekstra, welcome back to the show.
How do you do this without coffee? It's just me. I'm just a guest and I'm drinking all this coffee.
No, I know. It's weird. People don't believe it, but I mean, I haven't had caffeine in 13 years.
Wow.
I quit caffeine and nicotine on the same day.
Really?
Yeah, I was a real joy to be around.
Yeah. Did you drink Mountain Dew?
No.
Yeah.
No, I drank a lot of Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
I did a lot of Coke. That's a whole different subject. Yeah. Hang on a minute. So
79, Coca-Cola.
It is Coke. We were talking about this book, Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died. And before the break, we mentioned Paul Nacken, who is essential to this book. Absolutely essential.
I love Paul as much as a man can love another man.
Well, let's talk a little bit about him.
Nacken and I have worked on a couple of books together. He did a Supper Club book.
Right.
And he did The People's Place. We traveled around the country for the Soul Food and Civil Rights book. Now here, I think Paul, when we talk about this coming together, I think the idea for this really at the very beginning came with Nacken, because he had all these photos. He was there.
He was on the Jeep.
That Loop had hired him, and he was on the Jeep when they brought it for that little before things, you know, completely fell apart.
Yeah.
Out to center field. So he has all these stories. He took, obviously, all the pictures in the 79 pictures are his, but he has stories about how when the Jeep turned around, he was holding onto the windshield wiper so Nacken was right in the front line of all this.
Yeah. And beautiful stuff too.
Yeah.
Like really great pictures.
Yeah.
He's been touring with you a little bit, doing some book stuff, right, with you?
For this book?
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll be at all the events and stuff. He's a great talker.
Yeah.
We'll show some pictures from the book and stuff like that.
We were talking about how the book is set up as an oral history, and I'm looking at you have the discography in the front, which lists all the people that you talk to. I have to say that I was not aware of John Iltis's involvement.
That's a deep cut there.
That is a deep cut, and I'll tell you why. For people who don't, you know, who aren't in the biz, John Iltis is a legendary publicist here in Chicago. And when I started reviewing movies on Roy Leonard's show back in '85, I met John Iltis.
Yeah.
John Iltis is a great man,
yeah.
A great man, a stern man, and a very, very smart man. I had no idea he was involved in Disco Demolition.
He was a publicist.
One of the many things that I learned about it. How did you track that? Well, it's not hard to track
Iltis.
Down, John.
Iltis and I have been friends for a long time, back to my Sun Times days.
Yeah.
I enjoyed getting also the rock and roll people, you know. I thought that was important.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people forget Cheap Trick. That 79 was a breakout year for Cheap Trick.
Yeah, Budokan came out that year.
So we went out and saw Rick Nielsen in Rockford. Dennis DeYoung was hilarious. I mean, I don't know if you've talked to Dennis.
Dennis DeYoung.
Dennis doesn't hold anything back.
No, man.
He's not a Steve Dahl fan.
He's not. And
people who talk about all this stuff, I mean, he says, man, he was, what was it, Babe or Lady? I get those two.
Babe.
Yeah. He says how Dahl was blowing Babe up. You know? So Dahl had not that much musical prejudice. I mean, DeYoung's all upset. He's going, you know, well, they blew up Babe. And I wrote that about my wife. And DeYoung was calling Dahl on the, you know, so.
DeYoung is hilarious in it. And I have to say, I was just, because everybody knows Dennis DeYoung, you know, Styx guy, you know, wrote all these songs. Now he's Broadway dude.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chicago guy. He drops more F-bombs in this book. I was like, is that Dennis DeYoung?
Yeah, right.
I mean, every other word out of his mouth.
Some people, why Dennis DeYoung? Well, Dennis DeYoung, I mean, again, he talks about the Dahl thing. He's not a Dahl fan.
Yep.
He also a big White Sox fan.
Yep.
To this day, really tight with Tony La Russa.
Yep.
And also a Roseland guy, you know.
He's
he has these great stories.
Still connected to the South Side.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
To this day, still connected to the South Side.
So again,
of the city.
What I'm trying to do there is just talk about these Chicago roots and how they transfer into the whole White Sox experience.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Steve. All right. So you this idea to do this book. Now, you've known Steve for a while.
I've known Steve for a while. Yeah.
And did you sit down with him and go, we should do this? Or no, he, you know.
We all had a meeting at his house, me, Necken, and then the publishers and Dahl and stuff. And Steve was great. And I've told Steve, I mean, there's two ways this could have gone, you know. I mean, he left me alone. You know, this is pretty much, you know, or you know, to me, the worst way was he could have really meddled and edited.
Yeah.
And, you know,
there's some unflattering stuff in this book.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we all know that Steve went through some trouble.
Yeah.
Some problems. He struggled with alcoholism. There were some issues, you know, between him and Gary's breakup was legendary.
Yeah.
And the reasons behind that are kind of explored in the book.
Yeah.
And the struggle with alcohol and how it affected his relationship with Gary and his wife.
We went back and forth about getting Steve's wife, Janet, in the book. You know, I even talked to the publisher about that because, you know, from a journalistic point of view, you go, well, what's Janet going to say? But you know what? One time I was out of the house and Steve left the room and Jan and I talked for about an hour, hour and a half, and her stuff was really, really good.
Yeah.
Really, you know what? She was really honest.
Yeah.
It was really, really poignant. She talked about Steve's transformations and stuff, and I think Janet was a really, really valuable addition to the book.
Yeah, it's great stuff.
And I think there's a lot of testosterone in the book, too. So, I mean, you know, I mean, to have Nancy Faust and Janet and stuff, I think it's a good idea.
One of the most interesting for me, one of the most interesting angles of the book and stories of the book is the trajectory of Dahl's career, which went right through the roof, and Mike Vecht's
career. That's exactly right. You're exactly right. That's why I tell people. Yeah.
And it's the most fascinating part of the entire book. Mike Vecht, son of Bill Vecht.
Right.
Talk about like the journey that he went on and his involvement in it and what happened afterwards.
I know the Vecht family pretty well. I know Mike and I know Night Train, who's with the White Sox now.
Yeah.
And I know Mary Frances. She just had her 96th birthday. God bless her.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I know Mike was living in this big shadow of his father that was just really daunting for him. And it was hard for him to walk in those footsteps already, long before this happened. So they're working on this thing together. And Bill Vecht, father. Hall of Famer, was already kind of, you know, in failing health. And, you know, by that time he probably had 25 operations and stuff. And so they come up with this event and, you know, it blows up. And like the book says, I mean, like any good father, Bill starts taking hits for his son. And then Mike just like completely falls apart. He can't get a job in baseball. He has a great quote in there about the only teams that would hire me are soccer teams because apparently they like riots.
Exactly.
You know? And so he takes to drinking. And he goes down to Florida. And he's hanging drywall for a living, and Steve's career ascends, and Mike's fall. And you know, every good story has a point of conflict, a point of drama, and I think that's a really key thing.
It is,
and that's why I start the book with Mike.
That's Vecht. Exactly right. It's I think the core of the book, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Until you get into the history of what happened with Disco and all that, and you know, recently, but the core of how the event affected two major players is really fascinating.
And Steve is not as maybe Janet touches on it. Steve wasn't that articulate about it, but I mean, Steve had his own dealings with his father that he only resolved at the very end of his father's life. Mm-hmm. You know? So that whole father thing is kind of a vibe in the book.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And Bill took the hit for
he took
for
a
Mike.
Lot of the hits. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, it was sad. I mean, there's one. I forgot who told me the story about there's a line of thought that if they would turn the microphone over to Steve that night, that people would have like left the field and stuff. But they were never allowed. They looked at Steve as a total instigator. So Bill was on the field with that peg leg. He's trying to get everybody to go to their seats.
Probably had
stuff.
Cigarette butts put out.
But his peg leg, the sod was already starting to get fall apart. So his peg leg got stuck in the sod. And he couldn't get his peg leg out of the sod. The whole thing was sad. But there's a great scene. I think Jeff Schwartz tells this story about. So it's 2:30 in the morning, and they're all like sitting around the office, like what went wrong, and then Bill Veeck is shaking his head, you know, and I sat with him a couple times in the center field bleachers at Wrigley Field, but Bill's just shaking his head, and he goes, gentlemen, do you mind? It's been a long night. He just took off that leg, you know, he had an ashtray in the
exactly.
leg. He starts, you know, just like, so you think about it, if anybody wanted to do a movie of this, there's very great visual stuff with Bill and Mike Veeck.
Doesn't Bill Murray own the rights to Bill Veeck's,
they were kicking around, and I know Mike and Bill are a real good friend, you know, Bill's involved with the team in Charleston and the team in St. baseball teams in Charleston and St. Paul. So, it's out there.
The idea for this, just the core idea for why Disco Demolition happened is because at this point, Dahl got, we should probably touch on this.
Yeah.
At this point, Dahl moved from Detroit. He was doing very, very well in mm-hmm. Detroit. Moves from Detroit. Janet's still there. He commutes right. back and forth. Yeah.
She was getting her law degree or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah, and right. so he gets a job at DAI. And at this time, DAI is the rock station in Chicago.
Right.
4 months after they hire him, they buy a house. Janet moves back. He gets canned. They change format to
Christmas
disco.
Christmas Eve or something.
Yeah,
right?
It was Christmas Eve. He was in a Santa outfit.
Yeah.
So this impacts his life big time. So then he gets a job at the Loop. Hire him at the Loop, and eventually they team him up with Gary, and then the disco, anti-disco stuff happens. And the instigation for this is not so much he hates disco, which he did, but he's pissed off because he got fired.
Right.
You know, I mean, that was really why he started this.
That's what pisses me off about the revisionist stuff that people are talking about with the, you know, the homophobic stuff and the racism stuff. It was not about that at all. You and I were there, and it was not part of the conversation.
No.
It's a revisionist thing. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. He got fired, and that was the instigation. That's why he ripped on DAI, he ripped on disco, he smashed disco records every day, and he was getting such a huge following, it only made sense. Hey, let's do a promotion. This guy's on fire. Disco needs to have this kind of thing done to it.
And it was very, you know, he did a couple things at the Point East and, you know, some rock clubs with Roman and Teenage Radiation and stuff like that. And it kind of built and built and built. And they had, I forgot what's in the book, but the Point East, they had a riot and stuff. But he'll tell you, and he'll tell you to this day, Steve will say, you know, he was even worried about this whole event because he goes, what if it fails and like only 10,000 people show up, it'll really look bad for me. So he was never like all in, and it was not any big protest or anything.
Yeah.
Like that. It turned into whatever it did turn into.
Yeah. Disco.
I mean, I talked to Chaka Khan in the book, you know, and I talked to her about disco and R&B, and I also talked to her because she was at the Sly Stone riot. This was nothing like the Sly Stone riot in Grant Park. There, people got hurt. A lot of people got arrested. You know, it was just a bunch of goofy suburban kids running on the field.
That's all it was. Yeah. It was just like long-haired dopes in Loop T-shirts who were high.
Yeah, right.
That's
yeah.
all it was.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And who hated disco? Yeah. Like genuinely hated disco and liked rock and roll. I heard
nobody like doing any slanderous stuff or
it is revisionist
stuff
history
like you hear today on the street.
Absolutely, yeah. No, you're right. But I think it's great that you did that, that you pointed out the revisionist history of this, because there was no homophobia, there was no racism. That wasn't what it was about. Nobody cared that there was a huge gay following to disco. Nobody cared about that. Yeah. You know, the people who didn't like disco. That wasn't the point.
Yeah.
Nobody cared that there were a lot of Latin and black artists who were doing disco. That wasn't the point. It was teenage rebellion.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
And then people go, because I get a Facebook message on the anniversary of Disco Demolition. I posted, hey, I was there 37 years ago. whatever.
Yeah, 79, 37, right.
Yeah, 37 years ago. Yeah. And I posted, hey, I was there. It was great. And one of my gay friends said, I can't believe you supported this. And I went, well, first of all, I was 14.
Yeah.
And I had no political agenda at all when I was 14.
Yeah.
I liked Zeppelin and I didn't like the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
That's why I was there.
Well, you know, and I've said, I try to be, Steve and I have talked about this. This book is a time capsule. If someone wants to go and write a book about, you know, it being a homophobe, that's a great book. Then someone else should do it and
right.
do it through identity politics of 2016,
right.
and they can write it that way.
Right.
That's not what this book is about.
No, it brought me right back to 79, I guess.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I gotta say.
Yeah.
Okay, the book is great. It's called Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died, filled with great interviews, terrific pictures, and Dave's going to be in Evergreen Park tomorrow night at 6:30 at the Evergreen Park Public Library, and then on the 20th in LaGrange with Steve. And with Natkin, signing books as well, and that's at 7 o'clock on the 20th. Okay, we got to take a break. We got to talk more with Dave Hoekstra, who you can hear every Saturday night on Dave Hoekstra's Nocturnal Journal. All right, we'll take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Yeah, even Kiss made a disco record. Even Kiss. Dave Hoekstra is here. His book, Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died. It is a beautiful time capsule with incredible pictures and great stories. And it's written wonderfully by Dave, Steve Dahl, and Paul Natkin with the photography. You got Bob Odenkirk to do the intro.
Odenkirk, yeah.
He did the foreword. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's a Naperville guy.
Yep.
So let's play about it. And so, yeah, I mean, he's a little younger than me and stuff. But, you know, same thing. I mean, he looks at it as a cultural event, but none of he goes out and says it had nothing to do with homophobic.
Absolutely.
And it's very funny stuff. He's doing a drunk history.
I was going to say, you've heard about the drunk history,
right? Yeah, yeah. I guess he doesn't drink.
Yeah, but he drank for this.
He drank for this one. Yeah,
he did.
Yeah.
That's for
the love of the game.
He doesn't drink, but he went straight tequila.
Yeah, right. Well, that's not, a bad way to start.
So, all right. So Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died is out now. It's a tremendous book. I loved it. Now, you, though, have been on the road a lot working on a book right now. Tell everybody about what you're
Since the book came out, I'm trying to stay out of town. No, I'm doing a book with Chicago Review Press. They've done my other books. This is Curbside Splendor.
Right.
Chicago Review Press. We're doing a book called The Camper Book. And it's kind of like the other books where, again, oral histories with camping as a metaphor, you know, and just going to different campgrounds and gathering stories from people. I mean, I found some great stuff. I mean, last month I was at the Elvis Presley Boulevard RV park right across from Graceland.
That's fantastic.
And I find a woman from Chicago who works at the dollar store down the street, you know, and she moved down there to be closer to Elvis and stuff. But her father worked on the Sears Tower. I mean, her uncle worked on the Sears Tower. I just love finding stories like that.
Now, where have you traveled? Where have you gone?
Gosh, we've got a little camper van called Bluebird. It's a transit van, kind of like what the American Pickers did. It's a transit van I converted. So we've gone out to the West Coast. We've gone to taken the van down Pismo Beach. We went and saw John Steinbeck's van up in Salinas. I just got back on this Memphis trip. We went out to the East Coast, went to Myrtle Beach. There's a place there I never even couldn't believe it. It's called Ocean Lakes Family Campground, like 30,000 campers.
30,000
in high season.
Good
and
God.
Yeah, I know. It's right on the ocean. I mean, they also got rent, you know, rentals and stuff like that, but I couldn't believe it. They have a during the summer, like on weekend nights, everybody gets around a golf course. They have like a Mardi Gras parade along the ocean with all these people in golf carts. There, you know, one thing, I mean, again, I'm all about diversity, but it's hard to find people of color sometimes in the camping world and stuff, but I found some families there, you know. So it's been a wonderful book. Next week we're going down to the Ozarks, and we're going to all-men gay campground, again, for diversity.
Fantastic.
And then after that, we're going to go to the, you know, Walmart is very friendly to campers. So it's an hour away from Eureka Springs, where the gay men's campground is. So then we're going going to go over to the Walmart. I found the Walmart that's closest. I mean, the Walmart store that's closest to Walmart headquarters. So we're going to camp in their parking lot. You know, so it's oddball stuff like that.
Yeah. And yeah. Now, did you research this stuff to find it?
Yeah, I do a lot of research. Yeah. I really do. I mean, sometimes we wander around. But, I mean, the lady from Chicago at the Elvis Presley campground, she was great. They told me about her, and she was working that day. So I went down to the dollar store and introduced myself. She was great. So I waited until she got off work and then hung out at the trailer. They live in this trailer in this campground, her and her husband, and it was great stuff. I'm excited, you know, because I'm really not a camper. I've done tent camping on Natchez Trace and stuff, but to drive around in this van around the country, I've done 11,000 miles since June. It's a little out of my wheelhouse, but it's been fun. It's a lot of work.
How much longer are you going to? Is it just the summer?
We got a couple big trips that we're doing. Let's see, we're doing the Ozarks. I'm going to go down to Florida, and then I'm going to go to Maine. Those are the last, and then we'll fill it out with some Midwest stuff.
Midwest,
it's been a lot of. When
are you looking to finish the book?
The manuscript is due in March, and the book will be out March 2018. And a buddy named John Saul, former Sun Times guy, he's doing all the photography. He's a camper, and he's doing some video too.
There's a website called
thecamperbook.com, I think it is.
Okay. Thecamperbook.com. Yeah, yes, that's the website. It is thecamperbook.com.
Yeah, okay. But John just posted, we went to the Iowa State Fair, and God, that's amazing. You should do that sometime.
Yeah.
They have like 15,000 campers there. And during the Iowa State Fair, it's the seventh largest city in Iowa. So just today, we posted some video of the guy who's got a camp spot right at the main entrance, one of the main entrances to the State Fair. He's been there 37 years.
37
And his big
years.
Deal is, he says, when the animals escape, he's always there watching everybody chase the animals to get them back in the State Fair. So it's
now there's another detail about this trip that you that is connected to our mutual friend Mr. Tony Fitzpatrick.
Tony did the Tony donated some of his birds on the, and that's been a really wonderful thing. So we decorated the windows of the van with some of Tony's birds, the Steve Earle type birds.
Yeah,
so you see on Steve Earle's album cover.
Birds are a big part of his art.
Yeah, and
huge.
It's great. You know, you drive all around the country, and you know what? At the end of the day, and I've told Tony this, at the end of the day, you know, I'm in a park, whether I'm at a stoplight or I'm in a campground, you know what? People smile.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, what else is there to say? If you make somebody smile just by driving a van around, I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
You know, people ask if they can take pictures. Yeah, I go, yeah, and I tell them about the van. I tell them about Tony. We got Tony's name on the back of the van, and it's nice.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And Tony was at Disco Demolition.
Tony was at, yes, yeah, yeah. He's in the book.
Yep, he is.
He was like third or second on the field or something.
Yeah. I also like the quote that he has about, what is it when people got busted for meth? They inevitably six of the idiots would have a Loop T-shirt on.
T-shirt. Yeah, he's right. And but that's what it was. I mean, the Loop. I mean, what was the playlist? I mean, I keep always thinking about Molly Hatchet. I don't know why that always comes. But you know, and the Loop. I mean, think about all those early days of Chicago Fest at Navy Pier. That
Absolutely.
Was Loop dominated stuff, man.
I had like 7 Loop T-shirts. Yeah. I wore them all the time, and it was just, you know, it was a thing. I mean, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't think people really realize how big the Loop was, what it meant to a lot of teenagers, and how big Steve was.
Yeah.
I mean, Steve and Gary were massive.
Yeah.
They were huge to me. They were like heroes.
But again, though, like after this took, you know, after this event.
Yeah, I do remember, because I listened to Steve before the event,
uh-huh.
and I listened to him on DAI.
Yeah.
And I remember I was so angry because I was 13 years old, and he was giving away, he was going to host a screening of Animal House. And I'm listening to it. It was the summer of 78, and I'm 13, and I'm listening to it, and he's like, we're going to do a screening of Animal House. And I was like, oh, I got to go. And he's like, but you got to be 18 to get in. And I was like, no! And I remember being by my radio in the morning so mad that I couldn't go.
So you listened to him solo. I can't remember if I did. I certainly listened with Meyer. How did he change once Meyer got in?
Less characters. He did a lot of characters.
Yeah.
And I remember he answered his own phone.
Yeah.
When I would call it, because I got on the air a few times with him, he would do like a doctor who could, like a wacky doctor bit, and he would do different voices and characters, and he would take phone calls without screening them. He'd go, all right, hang on a second. And then I'd be on the air talking about my ingrown toenail, and he would prescribe something for my ingrown toenail. This is like I'm 12 years old listening to Dahl.
Yeah.
So he did a lot of wackier stuff.
Yeah.
And he kept doing parody songs, obviously.
Yeah.
But the whole dynamic changed with Gary.
He brought over all those characters from Detroit, too.
Yes, he did.
He talks in the book about it. He learned a lot of that stuff listening to radio in L.A., too.
Yeah.
Some of the characters he heard in L.A.
Absolutely, because he's from California.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, originally.
Yeah.
All right, can you hang out for one more?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay, hang on for a second. Dave Hoekstra is here, and I'm having a blast. The book is called Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died. It's available now. We have a link on our Facebook page. Tomorrow night, you can meet Dave. and get a book signed at Evergreen Park Public Library. It starts at 6:30. We'll take a quick break, and we'll talk more right after this on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. So Dave Hoekstra is with me. The book is called Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died. That's the album that I brought to get in for 98 cents.
Gene Siskel's favorite album.
Is it Gene Siskel's favorite movie?
Yeah, right.
And he bought the suit.
Yeah, right.
He bought the suit.
Just, where's the suit today?
I don't know. I know that Siskel's widow auctioned it off or did something with it, but he bought it. He loved that movie so much.
Yeah.
It was one of the suits. There were more than one suit.
Yeah.
But he actually bought the suit that John Travolta, the three-piece white suit that Travolta wore.
Well, that's an important thing. When, again, I'm not afraid to talk about this whole racism and homophobic thing. And the thing that people, when they bring that up, they don't talk about, and Kevin Hickey talks about this, and Steve, this is part of Steve's thing when he was doing it, is class structure, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing about, you know, getting dressed up to get in a club and wearing a fancy suit and... And Hickey is, I think Hickey might have been your age, or maybe it's 15, 16, mm-hmm. and he was a great interview. And he just talked about, and he was a pudgy kid, and he related to the kind of the outlier thing Steve was talking about with the class, and you know, being a little chubby and stuff like that, you know?
The parody song, the parody song that Steve did, Do You Think I'm Disco, to the tune of Do You Think I'm Sexy, was all about class.
Yeah, right.
There was nothing about race, nothing about sexuality, nothing. It was all about... You know, buying a big, an expensive suit to look better, yeah. And you know, with a Coke spoon and all this other stuff, and that's what it was about. It was about the lifestyle that he didn't approve of,
right?
Which, you know, here's the thing about Saturday Night Fever. Saturday Night Fever is a movie that people embraced, people loved, and decided that they wanted to live like Tony Manero. Yeah. They wanted to do that every Saturday night. But the movie is anti that.
Uh-huh.
That's the thing that's astounding to me. It's insanely anti that lifestyle. Like, it's a nowhere lifestyle. People die in this movie, and it goes nowhere. This kid, Tony Manero, should not be living this way. But it was completely misconstrued.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
That's nobody's fault. So were there any surprises when you were interviewing people for this?
That's a good question. I don't know why because we're talking about music. I mean, Dennis DeYoung was pretty funny.
Hilarious.
It was a pretty memorable interview and stuff. I mean, it was just fun to track. I just enjoyed track. You know, Thad Bosley, again. He was very important. Doesn't say a lot in the book, but he plays a ball player who played for both the White Sox and the Cubs during that period. I wanted to get Thad. I'm a big music fan. I knew Thad did some R&B 45s.
Yep.
He's still doing gospel records. And he talked a little bit, you know, black player. He talked a little bit about getting lost in Bridgeport with Chet Lemon one night.
Right.
Getting hassled around the park.
Right.
I really was happy to, it was hard to track down a lot of ball players and stuff. But I mean, I got Kenny Kravick, who was warming up for the second game, you know. I wanted to get a little, I heard Kessinger isn't in that bad of health. He was a manager, is in pretty bad health. I think he's down in Mississippi. So we didn't get Kess, but we got La Russa. I went down to Arizona. La Russa was waiting in the wings. They were getting ready to hire him anyway. He was in Iowa at that time. And he has great memories about, he went really in depth about it. And you were there. I mean, just the acoustics of that ballpark, Old Comiskey.
Mm-hmm.
The way it sounded, and La Russa went in depth about the way things echoed all over the place and stuff.
It was a
rock and roll ballpark.
Oh, it is. Yeah. It was really the acoustics were kind of terrifying.
Yeah,
I remember when I was a little kid. Might have been the first Sox game I ever went to. I must have been 4 or 5. And they did fireworks after the game, and they had to get me out of there.
Yeah,
I was freaking out because it was so loud and terrifying that I started crying. And my parents were like, "We got to get this kid out of here."
And you and I have talked about the neighborhoods being kind of equal then, but you know, I do remember going to the games as a kid with my dad and stuff at Comiskey and stuff. It was a little more wide. I don't know why I have these images. I remember guys just drinking Jack Daniels out of a bottle there. I didn't see quite as much of that in the bleachers at Wrigley Field and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was kind of crazy there.
Yeah.
The, you know, so this whole thing was kind of percolating. It really was.
Yeah.
There's There's a story that we got about one of those rock concerts they did, World Series of Rock, where they set fires up in the upper deck. You know?
Yeah. Comiskey was crazy. Yeah. I loved old Comiskey.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was six blocks away from Wrigley, and I'm a Cub fan, lifetime Cub fan. But I loved going there.
Old Comiskey was great.
I can't stand the cell, but.
Yeah, neither can
or whatever.
I.
What the hell is it called now? Guaranteed rate.
Yeah.
Guaranteed rate park. Yeah. I don't like, and I especially hated it when they first opened it in 92. Yeah. I remember 91 when they opened it. I went to a game and I couldn't believe, I had vertigo. I was up in the upper deck and I was like, what? At least now they put an overhang on there. They fixed some of the problems and it's fine.
Yeah.
But it's not like old Comiskey. Old Comiskey was great. It was a great park.
You ask about surprises. Everybody kind of looked at this book. I mean, when I did interviews, probably maybe 40 people, I don't know, I talked to, but everybody kind of, whether it was on the phone or in person, mostly in person, everybody kind of smile and have a wistful memory, except for Roger Bossert. And I go down there, I interview him, spend a couple hours in his office down at the cell.
Well, can you imagine what he had to go through after that?
And he goes, do you think this is funny? He's an old military guy. He goes, how would you like it if somebody went into your house and turned over all your furniture? he didn't really smile during the interview, but he was.
Well, they really screwed up the field.
Yeah, they really did. Roger was great, though. He was a great thing. I went and got Jack Schaller, who was, he's since passed away, old man Schaller from Schaller's Pump. He comes downstairs and I bring in Steve Trout. Steve Trout had ever been to Schaller's Pump. So Steve Trout and I are interviewing Jack Schaller together. There's some great stuff in there.
Yeah, really, really great. And again, the pictures, I can't tell you how great the
Napkin's
pictures
great.
Are.
Yep.
Yeah, really, really good stuff. Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died, brought back a ton of memories for me, Dave.
I had such
a great time reading it. And another thing that you do, I want to mention, is you capture that night, you capture that time really well, and you also do a beautiful job in this book telling the story of Chicago radio at that time. You talk about what WLS, the Big 89, was like at that time, what DAI was like, MET. And that brought back so much, because I'm a radio, obviously, I've been in radio business for a long time, and I grew up listening to Chicago radio, and at that time, it was all about rock. And you do a great job.
I'm glad you say that, because I felt sometimes when I was writing, I was getting too geeked out on that, but I really wanted to again, just like it was important to talk about neighborhoods, I think it was important to talk about radio.
Absolutely.
I understand that.
And the landscape of what it was like in the late 70s on FM radio and AM is brought to life beautifully. And it's fun, because I know Bob, obviously, Surratt, we worked together here for many years, and I know him really well. It's fun to hear him talk about the Big 89 days. That's because I remember those days, And I'm friends also with Steve King.
Yeah.
And, Steve obviously spent a good portion of his time at the Big 89.
Yeah, right.
And it was a very specific kind of radio station. And talk just a little bit about how different radio was.
Personality radio, yeah. I mean, and I grew up here. I remember I was editor of a school paper in Naperville, and one of the first stories I did for the Naperville Central High School newspaper was Lou Jack over there at where the London House is now, And it was just very personality oriented. I mean, you'd go down there and you'd actually watch these guys work.
Yeah.
Some guys would draw the curtain. I think maybe Lou Jack did.
Yeah.
But I mean, Lou Jack couldn't have been nicer. He was, he was just the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
A kid from high school. But same thing with Marina City. You go over to CFL and stuff. It was just these guys, and Surratt talks about that. I mean, the regionalism. Surratt has a story in there about he'd go down to Champaign to do another thing. People knew who he was.
He could hear LS being played in Champaign, and it hit him like a ton of bricks. Like, oh my God, we're reaching Champaign and making an impact.
These guys, and Steve and Gary came in at kind of, maybe, I guess, at the tail end of that, But these radio people, especially in a town like Chicago, and Bob and I talk about that, they have other types of celebrities in New York and other types of celebrities in L.A., but here, it's like radio and athletes, are the big personalities.
It's funny. It doesn't go in. You don't go into massive detail in it, but I think one of the most interesting and craziest times in Steve and Gary's career was when they went back to WLS. And when Lou Jack and he and Gary had wars, and Lou Jack would come busting into the studio and start screaming.
We got Les in the book. That was fun.
Les Grubstein. Yeah,
Les is in there. I don't know if I used that, but he did talk. I don't think I used that, but he did talk.
It's not
about
in there, but
yeah, he was there when all that went down.
Les had some great. Les Grubstein, by the way, fantastic and a great sportscaster.
Yeah,
hilarious.
Something.
He's something. Yeah. But like that time at the LS, you never knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Like you put on Steve Vingary, and they'd say something about Lou Jack, and then you'd hear the door bust open, and Lou Jack would come in, and all hell would break loose. It was fantastic radio.
I'm a fan, you know, and I mean, we could just talk radio. I mean, I'm a fan, and I asked Steve that question. I asked Gary the question, too, if they'd ever get back together. I think that ship has sailed. But,
yeah.
You know, Steve, maybe they could be on the same station someday. Steve answered like that.
Yeah. And you know, I remember when they got back together for the air and water show.
Yeah,
whatever,
right.
And that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And then they were together one other time. And I can't remember exactly.
I don't even know if you can recreate that.
No, you can't.
Yeah, right.
You can't really. And you know, and the years that Gary worked here, you know, I got to know him and I talked to him and I never once mentioned Disco Demolition to him because it was something that he never wanted to, that I don't think he ever wanted to really talk about. I did mention Steve a couple of times and tell him, you know, like what a big fan I was of them as a partnership, but I never really ever, and I so wanted to ask him about Disco Demolition, you know, and then it's in this book.
Well, Gary was a class act. He didn't have to do this,
you know,
and he took a lot of time with us, and I thought some of his comments, I think, are really, really, like I said, especially growing up here, are really, really valuable. And
absolutely.
He's very, very, actually, he also, that's kind of poignant, the stuff he talks about. He tried to talk to people. What is it that makes a team work? He said he talked to people. What made Siskel and Ebert work? He really tried to understand what was going on with him and Steve.
Yeah.
And Gary was great.
Yeah, he was great. Everything in the book is great, Dave. It's just wonderful. It's a great time capsule, and it brought back so many memories, and I just had a blast reading it. And I wish you nothing but success.
Oh, thank you.
And keep in touch more.
Okay.
It's been a long time since you've been
on the
show.
We'll take you for a spin. You, me, and Tony will go out in the camper van.
Let's do that.
Yeah, let's go see a drive-in movie.
That sounds great, man. Okay, so tomorrow night, Thursday night, Evergreen Park Public Library at 6:30. Come out and meet Dave. Get books signed. Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died is the book. And at Anderson's Bookshop in LaGrange, Tuesday, September 20th at 7 o'clock, an in-store event that is free to the public. And it's going to be Steve Dahl, Dave Hoekstra, and Paul Natkin all there signing books. We have links on our Facebook page for all of the events. Facebook.com/NickDShow. And be sure to listen to Dave's Nocturnal Journal. That can be heard on Saturday nights right here from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. on WGN. What a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks,
man.
For being so generous.
Just had a blast.
Time.
I had a blast. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay,
that's Dave Hoekstra. Get the book, Disco Demolition, The Night Disco Died. And we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN.